Good morning, Tucson, Arizona. Welcome to The Morning Voice. I am your host, Grant Kruger. Excited to be here with you this sunny Wednesday morning, March 5th. A beautiful day in the Old Pueblo, as we keep saying here, a Chamber of Commerce weather in Tucson, or perhaps better known as Sun Corridor weather in Tucson these days. You know, this is absolutely the highest of high season over here. So many cool things are going on in the Old Pueblo. These are the times we sell all the real estate. These are the times to be here in Tucson. And it often breaks my heart when I drive down to the KVOI Bustos Media Studio over here on the south side, because I get to take Alvernon Road, right? And I see a number of encampments, a number of problems, and that sort of inner decay that we're having here in Tucson. And it really shocks me when I think of just all the potential we have over here in the Sun Belt, in the southwestern United States. We could be doing so much better. But on today's Food for Thought, I'm going to bring you the four things you need to know going on in the Old Pueblo today. First and foremost, the University of Arizona beats the Sun Devils a sweep last night at the McHale Center, 113-100, in yet another very late game in the Big 12 schedule. It seems to me that we were promised a little earlier game that perhaps
You certainly think, if you're moving time zones, you know, to the east.
Right, as we move east or to these Midwestern teams, or maybe as some people would say, flyover states, that in some way, shape, or form, we'd get earlier games and yet another 9 p.m. start. Now, it makes tickets a little easier to come by, right, for a guy like me, as certainly some of our older fans, even for important games against Arizona State, might not be willing to go bell to bell and take a game that ends at, say, 11:30 p.m. or so. I mean, that's a pretty late finish in Tucson. I actually got reached out to by the University of Arizona coaches last night about Union Public House and whether we'd be open late. How many restaurants can you find that are still open at midnight on a Tuesday night in Tucson after the game, right? This is a pretty small sample size, and we were pretty happy to have some of those players and teammates come by. There were six seniors. This was a senior night. Four of those seniors are actually on their double dip on senior night over here, based on those funky years of COVID eligibility. We had four seniors do their second senior night. Don't ask me how that one works over here. I think we're at the tail end of this COVID eligibility, where we've had like 6 and 7 year players at the University of Arizona and in NCAA athletics as a whole. Either way, we're wrapping up the season at McHale. One more road game coming up against Kansas, a really big deal, of course, a rival that we haven't had a lot of opportunities to play ever in the regular season. And so I think we're all really excited for that one in Tucson and to get on to the Big 12 championship and hopefully the NCAA tournament. On future shows coming up in the next month, I want to bring in some folks from Arizona Sports Enterprises, and we're going to talk about the business of college athletics as we move past this year's NCAA tournament. I think it's going to be really interesting for folks to unwrap House versus NCAA settlement, how this $20.5 million cash that the U of A is going to have to share with players is going to break down, right? Does Title IX come into play? Do we have to share with women athletes? Does this work equally, right, or not? And then what we do moving forward. All these players are going to be playing with the U of A, the Wildcat, that brand. But are they really semi-pros at this point? Is this a completely different game than it was in the last couple of years? And so I'm going to work to bring us on some of the new corporate executives from Arizona Sports Enterprises, which is the group that manages the A and is kind of managing all of these athletics, the players. They're going to have to help manage some of the payments from the university of the players and juggle this whole NIL thing. It's kind of a hot mess. And so I think this will be an interesting topic for us all to figure out together. Second on your list over here, today is the last day to mail in your ballots for Proposition 414. Unless you've been hiding out under a rock or perhaps hiding out on Alvernon under a number of colorful 414 signs, you probably already know this. We've got a mail-in only election for a 0.5% sales tax. And those results are supposed to come in on Tuesday night. I'm hearing rumors that perhaps we're not going to actually get that information on Tuesday, that they might be a little bit understaffed and the city, and that those results may not come until Wednesday or Thursday, which worries me a little bit for a mail-in election. I mean, how could things possibly go wrong for a mail-in election, right, guys? And so One way or another, those ballots are due to hit the mailbox today, or you can take that ballot and drop it off in person and get your vote in. We're expecting a pretty low turnout, probably 63,000-64,000 votes in total out of a city with more than 500,000 people. It's going to be about a little over 20% voter turnout on a race that could decide whether we have the highest sales tax in the state of any city over 75,000 people. So do get those particular ballots in. This one is going to be close. It's going to come right down to the wire, and your vote is absolutely going to count. Also this week, the World Baseball Classic has been going on in the Old Pueblo. I love baseball here in Tucson. You've heard me cry about our lack of spring training, of how we've lost it, about how we've lost AAA ball. If we want to support baseball in the Old Pueblo, you've got to attend games like this. Tomorrow at Keno Veterans Memorial Stadium, 6 p.m., Germany versus Brazil. It's our last chance to show a bit of support. And so if you want these perhaps rumored Mexican professional team to come here, whether we want spring training exhibitions, whether we want any semblance of pro ball or not, we've got to put a good showing out there at Keno this Thursday. That's tomorrow, 6 p.m. Show up for this one, because it's going to be a really nice barometer about how much we care about baseball in the Old Pueblo and how we might be able to support a semi-professional team. And then finally, this week, one of the biggest events in Tucson, the Colo Guard Classic coming up. We've got the golf tournament moving again in its second year from the Omni Tucson National to the Westin La Paloma, a really nice central location. And the Westin La Paloma has pretty much been the center of the Tucson sports universe for this last week. A number of the World Baseball Classic teams are actually staying up there as well, too. I've seen some of their tour buses working their way in and out to the facility. The golf course is looking absolutely gorgeous as we get ready for our one professional golf tournament here in Tucson. This is our opportunity to be on national TV and show what really is an amazing, beautiful golf course, a private golf course at that as well too, one that you often just can't get on and go walk around and check out. And this course is going to be open for the public all week long. Of course, the professional golf tournament is a three-day tournament because it's a Champions Tour, and so they play on Friday, Saturday, Sunday. That weather is looking absolutely fantastic for Sunday. This should be a marquee matchup, a great showing for the Old Pueblo. So please get out there and support the Colo Guard Classic. It's for a great cause. It's got an amazing title sponsor. It's had a multi-year deal here for Tucson. And this is just about our biggest pro sporting event on a national level here for the entire year of Tucson. As well, there's going to be an amazing concert coming up. We've got a pair of concerts this year. In previous years, the Colo Guard Classic would do a concert on the driving range, and right after the golf tournament would end, they would immediately work to convert that driving range into a concert venue. Well, let's just say some of the residents of La Paloma may not have wanted to have such a big, showy concert in their backyard, and maybe there wasn't even, quite frankly, space for that. And so we're going to bring that concert back to the Rito Downs, a racetrack that hasn't had horse racing in this last year, located at First and River, right? This is another great central location to see a live show. I've advocated for years to Pima County that we need to do more live music and more cultural and more food events at the Rito Downs. It's so centrally located, it's so much easier to get to than, say, the Pima County Fairgrounds. We've got a 10,000 person historic venue with a beautiful view of the mountains. And this Friday and Saturday, a pair of concerts tangential to the golf tournament coming up. There's going to be Vanilla Ice headlining on Friday night, Rob Bass, Tone Loc. The opener will be Gigi and the Glow. For those that don't know, Gigi's generally like a headliner for us at Union Hospitality Group. She's your opener at 5:15. They're going to be bringing the heat on Friday. And then on Saturday, there's Co Wetzel and Dylan Marlowe, a couple big country stars. Co Wetzel is way, way too big to play the Maverick over here. And when we come back after the break, I'm going to bring on Matt Bradstreet. We're going to have a little bit of a live remote over here from a gentleman who has been putting it together for this golf tournament, working for months to bring you this event in the Old Pueblo. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to Grant Krueger on The Morning Voice, 10:30 a.m., your home for local news and talk. Welcome back to The Morning Voice. I am your host, Grant Krueger. A little bit of Tone Loke over there to bring out the action. We are joined live from Rito Downs by Matthew Bradstreet, the man making this concert happen. Good morning, Matthew.
Good morning, everybody. How you doing, Grant?
Well, thank you so much for taking the time to jump on The Morning Voice over here, Matthew. I know you've been putting together this concert for months with the Tucson Conquistadors.
Yeah, we're getting excited. All the preparations are coming together. The site's coming together. So, yeah, we're really excited to get this going. Two great nights here, Friday and Saturday night, coming up this weekend.
So break it down for me. When do the doors open up for these shows on Friday?
So on Friday, doors open up at 4 p.m. Music will start at 4:30. So we've got a couple of local acts that you may know and love that'll be warming us up. And then our 90s, we love the 90s trio comes on. So that'll be Tone Loke, Rob Bass, and Vanilla Ice leading the charge.
Unbelievable. I was saying before the break that Gigi and the Glow is going to be your opener on Friday. Like, this is a headliner for us at Union Hospitality Group, and this is going to be an opener for the Conquistadors concert over here.
I know. We're really excited to have her. She's so great. And so her show is just always amazing. So we're really privileged to have her as part of this set.
I've always been really excited about the potential of the Rito Downs as a multi-use facility, Matthew. You've been on site now for weeks, if not months, putting this together with Pima County. How's the site looking, and how's it been working with Pima County to do this event?
Pima County's been great. I think they're really excited that we're using the facility in that multi-use capacity. Of course, there's the soccer facility is great and really supports our town. But also, right, being able to have these events that we have in this really good time of year for Tucson to have these events and have that available to us has been great. So, yeah, the county and Parks and Recs have been great. They're awesome to work with. Very accommodating.
So this is the second year of doing the concert at the Rito Downs with relation to the Colo Guard Classic over here. Why the choice to do 2 days?
We just thought from last year we had a really good turnout, and we thought it was something to try to give a little bit of more breadth and reach out to a wider set of the community if we had two different kind of genres that we were going to bring to the community for this. And it was an opportunity for us to really get out there. And obviously the Tucson Conquistadors and our mission to provide avenues for youth to get experience and those folks that might not have access to those character building activities to get a little bit more money into the community and really build that charitable giving that we give back to Tucson directly.
So you've spent a lot of time on this one personally, and this is obviously not your profession as well. You're a volunteer with the Tucson Conquistadors. How long have you been a Conquistador?
This is my fifth tournament with the Tucson Conquistadors. I hear it's a second or third job. But it's a good feeling. It really it means a lot to me to be able to give back to this community.
Without a doubt. And that facility is looking absolutely fantastic right now. I understand you're on site right now waiting for that stage to be dropped off and start to be erected, correct?
Yeah, the stage is waiting for us to get the crew and get the positioning just right for the stage. So it is there, and work is happening as we speak.
That's amazing. This is a facility that is so centrally located, right? And such a good spot to do live music or cultural food events. I really think that we should be utilizing this more often. What are some of the challenges of setting up at a place that doesn't do concerts regularly?
I would say, at least from the site standpoint, it's a very good logistics site to work with. The things that are bothersome are, right, making sure that we have a safe egress and entrance into the site, so that maintaining that traffic flow, not trying to be as least disruptive as we possibly can to the community for those folks. So we've tried to plan that very well, so that we make the least impact to those people that aren't going to the show, but you know, trying to make sure we're safe for all the patrons that do come, and making sure that those exits and entries are well defined and well planned out. So that's kind of the challenge with that site, is that entry and exit. So I would suggest that folks that are coming to the show really think about either taking an Uber or Lyft or getting a ride there. Don't bring your car. There is limited parking. There is some parking, but there's limited parking. So if you can get there without bringing your car, that's probably a good idea.
Without a doubt. And then you can enjoy an adult beverage or two, or perhaps some delicious meals from some of the local food vendors that are going to be there. Can you break down the kind of vendors that you could expect to see at the concert?
Yeah, we have a few different food options. We've got cow pig, which is like burgers and fries and stuff. And then we've got a Berea ramen from Las Chicas. We've got Rico's Tacos to get your taco fix. And we have churros for dessert out there. And then, of course, all those frosty beverages. We are featuring this Lalo Tequila, which is a new tequila brand that's come out. Very good stuff for those that like tequila, very smooth. And some of our other sponsors that have brought these vendors in that are really, really something to try to showcase some of the food of Tucson.
This is such an important event.
You can
event.
Walk down the river to Union afterwards.
Right? I wasn't going to self-promote over there, but I appreciate the hookup. Hey, this is such an important event for Tucson. Who are the title sponsors that are making the big contributions and making this happen so that we can have a pro golf tournament in Tucson, so that we can have a pair of awesome concerts?
Yeah, we really want to thank Kaiser Door and Gate. That company has actually is amazing, super generous, both to the concert and to the golf tournament. Raytheon Technologies is a big sponsor. IBM is also a big sponsor for the presentation. U of A has put a lot of money into it as well. They've been a staunch supporter of both the tournament and the concert for many, many years. So we really appreciate their support. Also, O'Reilly Chevy is in there as a main sponsor as well. And many, many more, right, that just the list goes on and on of the generosity of this town on how we could to get something like this out into the community.
Without a doubt, Matthew, ultimately, if we don't support events like this, they could dry up. We've lost so many professional and semi-pro sporting opportunities here in the Old Pueblo. The idea that we could have both a pro golf tournament and pretty much the most amazing concert set that you could have this side of the casino, right? There just aren't that many places that could put on a show like this. It's also going to end in a little bit more timely manner. You were being pretty political about the impact over there, but as someone that's gotten in trouble with noise ordinances from live music shows in St. Philip's Plaza before, these shows are going to wrap up about 9:30. That's about tip-off time for your average U of A Big 12 game. So you could go to this concert and still be back and tuck it in by 10 p.m., huh?
Yes, sir. That's right. 9:30 is the show will end, so we're trying to get everybody home safe after that.
So let's talk about Saturday as well, too. Weather looks to be a little nicer on Saturday, and rather than the I Love the 90s set, we're going to go country. Who do we got coming up on Saturday, and what time do those doors open?
Yeah. So doors open at 3:30 on Saturday, so a little bit earlier. Music is going to start with, again, some local talent. We've got Drew Cooper is going to start us off, and then we have Sophia Rankin in the sound, so two amazing local artists really bringing up and being very successful. So if you're around town, I'm sure you've heard both of those names or heard their music, and they're really talented groups. And then coming into it, Dylan Marlowe will open up for Coe Wetzel. So those are the national acts. Both of those country artists are really great and up-and-coming country artists out there. In that genre.
No, Coe Wetzel's a really big name. As the owner and operator of the Maverick, as someone that follows a lot of country music, like, this is a big name to be playing in Midtown Tucson, no?
Absolutely. We're we were excited to get him, right? It was a real boon to bring him to town and to provide an opportunity for Tucson to see some of this new up-and-coming rising star.
So break it down for me. We've only got a couple minutes left over here. Break it down for me. Where can we find tickets for the show? Are they, A, still available? Are there VIP, general admission, cabanas? Like, what's left out there right now to purchase for these tickets?
So there's definitely VIP and general admission tickets. You can go to Rockfest. That's rcqfest.com to get tickets. But also, if you know a conquistador, reach out to them. We have about 300 members, 65 active members in the community. Any one of them can help you with getting tickets. Also, you could call our office at the Tucson Conquistadors, and the nice folks there can help you get tickets as well. And if you are coming in just day of show, you can walk up to the box office. There's one other critical part of this Saturday for us. That is, it's a military appreciation concert. So if you go to the Rock CQ Fest website, you can go. There's a link there where active duty and veterans can actually go in and get a free general admission ticket once they fill out the information at that link. So it is a free GA ticket to active duty and veterans here in our community to honor their service and their dedication to our country.
What an amazing salute to our servicemen and to the DM50, you know, and thank you for participating in this and volunteering your time. Again, that's rocqfest.com for those looking to pick up tickets over there. You could get them at the door. You could get them from any Tucson Conquistador at the Tucson Conquistador office. I've got paper tickets for sale at the Maverick King of Clubs at 6622 East Tanga Verde. All kinds of options for you to pick up those tickets. Please go out there and support this awesome show that's supporting both our servicemen and a whole number of youth sport events by the Tucson Conquistadors. Matthew Bradstreet, thank you for your volunteering and your time on this concert. I know it's been a real labor of love. I'll let you get back going to the stage over there, and we'll see you at the Rito Downs shortly.
Thanks, Grant. Thanks, Tucson.
Thank you for supporting. Don't go anywhere. We've got Bob Hoffman, General Manager, President of the Tucson Roadrunners, coming up after the break. We're going to talk a little bit about local hockey. You're listening to 1030 AM The Voice, your home for local news and talk. A little tragically hip there for the opener. You're listening to Grant Kruger on The Morning Voice, 1030 AM, your home for local news and talk. Canada has been pretty hot on the news with both the tariffs and the very exciting hockey game that we had just a couple of weeks ago in that Four Nations tournament. And we are joined live right now by the president of the Tucson Roadrunners, our local hockey team, Mr. Bob Hoffman. Good morning, Bob.
Good morning, Grant. How are you?
I'm well. Super excited to have you on the show today. It's not that often that we get a president over here on The Morning Voice.
No, good to hear. I was really drawn in there by the tragically hip. That's a great connection to get us going on the hockey talk and getting us talking about Canada. And boy, you mentioned they're in the spotlight probably more than they want to be for many other different reasons. But, you know, my expertise flies to that hockey side of things. And it's been a great couple of weeks for the sport for sure all around, whether it's the Four Nations, the NHL getting back at it, and certainly now the stretch run in our league, the American Hockey League.
Where did this animosity come from between the United States and Canada? I always kind of felt like they were our allies to the north, and suddenly they're booing our national anthem, and we were having three fights in the first 9 seconds of a game.
It was crazy. I mean, I don't know if anybody could have written that script. And, you know, I mean, obviously it happened, you know, a couple of weeks even prior, just with all of the, you know, the current heat on our political culture. And yeah, it was surprising. I think it was in Ottawa and Vancouver games first started where there was some booing happening during the U.S. national anthem. And that was certainly surprising. We're not used to that, I guess. But of course, American sport fans and just people that are patriotic and, you know, love their country, they started, you know, kind of reciprocating that down here in the United States. And I mean, we had the Abbotsford Canucks from British Columbia, and 2 weekends ago, right after the Four Nation tournament ended and kind of all this was going on and was starting to get some press and people were starting to obviously take note of that, divide, if you will, between Canada and the U.S. On the national anthems during sporting events. And I was concerned. I didn't want to see it. I don't think it's a great look for either side, really. And when a Canadian team comes to play the U.S. In the U.S., in the NHL, in the American Hockey League, they play both anthems. So we had that going at our arena and playing the Canadian national anthem first. And I was just kind of quietly anticipating, fingers crossed, waiting that we made it through, and we did. So, I tip my hat to the Tucson hockey fan, the Tucson sport fan, that we didn't become a story on that.
Without a doubt. But the attention that drew to hockey, to the sport in general, I think was good for the sport in spite of the fights early up front, to show that nationalistic pride, to have the teams playing on a national level as opposed to a professional level. We haven't had that in the Olympics over the last couple of years as well, too.
Yeah, there's so many layers to that, Grant. It's, and I know you understand this being a big hockey guy yourself, and it's like, especially if you look even, from a macro level of all-star games in general and these mid-season exhibitions that happen in all sports, it just really, how underwhelming they are. And when the NHL put that together, a lot of it was during negotiations with the players' union, which is a huge, a huge piece when it comes to this, for player safety, for the financial pieces of it. Just the break that the other players get is a very important facet to it, is how long of a stretch do the guys that aren't playing in any all-star game or any tournament, any mid-season break, how long is their break? What do they get to do with that time off? And those kind of questions. And there was all kinds of negotiations for years on this, that even, caused the last Olympics to not have NHL players playing in it. And it was very different in the way that was kind of perceived. And when you see other sports and, that the ratings the NBA All-Star Game gets, and the NFL has pretty much just dismissed the Pro Bowl to make it a flag football game that's just unwatchable. And I think when the NHL and the Players Association put this together, I don't think they had any idea it was going to get the draw that it did. And it really was just kind of a placeholder until the Olympics, with the intent of being, this is a one-year thing. This is not going to be something that's repeated and something that is done each and every year. And now I wonder, I think they're going to have to kind of rethink that, because the ratings were great. People that hadn't really, paid much attention to hockey in some time, or maybe even ever in their sports lives, were all over this. And the games were phenomenal. It was must-see TV. And I think the NHL really found something there that'll lead us a year from now into the Olympics that will draw, I think, the exact same kind of response. And amazingly, when you see the players compete like they did, you just want to give that tape to the other sports and say, look at this. Imagine what happens when you try, and what that does for the fan, because there are players. Matthew Tkachuk got hurt in the tournament and is going to be out for the rest of the regular season. And for people that don't know, he's one of the stars of Florida who won the cup. The Stanley Cup last year. So, this isn't just as simple as let's just show up for the weekend, make a couple of layups and a jump shot and it's over.
No, without a doubt, Bob. Ultimately, so many of these all-star games are just so lackluster. And they, in some cases, you probably couldn't put an international flavor to them, right? The NFL probably doesn't have enough international players to field teams from other countries. But most of hockey stars come from outside the United States, no?
Yeah, no, exactly. So that international flair certainly helps. And the NBA is getting closer. You're right on the NFL, no chance there. But, I think the NBA is getting closer to being able to field maybe an international team. I don't think they're quite there yet. But, a handful of stars from Canada, and then obviously over in Europe, and in the forefront of basketball news recently with Luka Doncic being traded over to Los Angeles. Super, international talent. But I even if they did that, Grant, I think it's so crazy because, I mean, you and I've talked about this before. I mean, the hockey, the DNA of a hockey player is just different, right? And I, of course, selfishly and biasedly think they're the best, athletes and the best sports stars in the world, just the way that they, connect to fans and the way that they go about their business. And, I don't even know that the NBA, if you had that international flair, if it would, raise the pulse or not. In hockey, You know, even hockey all-star games in the past, you know, a little bit of competitiveness. You might get one hit out there, but certainly lackluster in you know, what you're watching. They went to a three-on-three tournament a few years ago and thinking they would open up the ice and some different approaches. Our league, the American Hockey League, that's how they do it. We play up four divisions that, you know, play each other in a round-robin tournament, and it's not that competitive, right? But I think when the NHL and the International Hockey Federation, along with the you know, the Players Association, when they put this together, I think they you know, kind of realized that that international flair might drive the competitive juices. But like I said earlier, I don't think they had any idea they had the lightning in the bottle that they did.
Do you think that, you know, given that the Tucson Roadrunners play in the AHL, that the AHL All-Star Game could move to an international format like this as well, too?
Yeah, 100%. I think it opened the eyes of all the governors in our league and teams in our league. This is, you know, the All-Star Game dilemma has been a question in really all sports for some time. Baseball kind of tweaked it, you know, some time ago to where that game actually meant home field advantage in the World Series. So, yeah, whether that's significant or not, you know, can be debated. But at least had something, a carrot that was dangling there for the teams to go out and compete and you know, to give it their all to try to win a game for the fans, because ultimately, you know, it's for the fans. And I think that's where a lot of sports lose sight of it. And the American Hockey League's no different in that the festivities of the All-Star Weekend this past year was in Coachella Valley.
Right, the Palm Desert.
Yeah. And next year it's in Rockford, Illinois. It's, you know, it's, you want to have this extravagant, great weekend to celebrate the fans. And when you don't want a player to get hurt, and they clearly don't want to go and, you know, log 22 minutes of ice time at an All-Star game, you know, it's trying to figure out how to make that watchable, how to make that a good product. And I do give the American League credit that, you know, more so than the National League initially, that they tweaked different formats. They have played a U.S. versus the world format in the past. It was about 8 years ago, so it was a while ago. But they've tried different things. But I do think that this, seeing kind of the NHL stars set the table and really now raise the bar, I don't think that the 20, 21, and 22-year-old future stars in our league wouldn't follow that and wouldn't jump in and say, all right, let's go compete and win a game.
So do you think we could ever get an AHL All-Star game here in Tucson? If they did this in the Palm Desert, right, in Coachella Valley, is this something that could be on our radar one day for an amazing event that would draw a lot of tourism to the Old Pueblo?
Oh, it'd be fantastic. It's been on my radar since day one when the Roadrunners came to town in 2016. I've had meetings with local leaders about it. Have had meetings with the American Hockey League about it. We settled at one point and brought annual meetings. So if you're a baseball fan, you kind of know the baseball winter meetings. Those, we hosted those in Tucson several summers ago. And hockey, of course, we play in the winter, so it's the summer meetings, right? And you know, people love Tucson from around the league to be able to showcase this great city and this great, all the great resorts that we have here. It's just a great tourist spot. The issue we've always run into in conversations about the All-Star Game is the timing of it is not really movable, because it's around whatever the NHL's doing. It's around, it kind of plays into when the trade deadline is about a month later. So the date has to be fairly specific as the first Monday in the month of February. They go that weekend between the football championship games and the Super Bowl on that Monday. And the issue we run into here in Tucson is the gym show.
Oh.
And that the town is overrun. There's no hotel space. We would need, in order to put on an All-Star game like that, we've done the estimates of anywhere from 150 to 250 room nights per night, along with the space for all the festivities. So if we can ever figure out the schedule, if we could ever figure out a way to pivot a little bit off of what always has been, if you will, for the American Hockey League, we are on the map with that. And I'd love to be able to showcase this great town to the entire league, because we don't get all the teams in, you know, here. It's not a balanced schedule like some leagues have. It's very driven on your divisional rivals with a couple teams from outside your division each year. But, you know, there are 16 teams in the American Hockey League that have never come to Tucson. And I would love to be able to kind of showcase this town and our arena and what we have to offer to the entire league. And one day, fingers crossed.
I'd love to work that with you as well, too, Bob. That would be amazing. We've got to take a quick break over here. We've got one more segment with Bob Hoffman, president of the Tucson Roadrunners, coming up. You may have stayed up late last night listening to the president, but you haven't listened to this president. Stick around. You're listening to Bob Hoffman and Grant Kruger on 1030 AM The Voice. You're home for local news and talk.
I know it's a little early, Grant, but we can be positive.
Welcome back to The Morning Voice. I'm your host, Grant Kruger. Another little set of Tragically Hip over here to bring back Bob Hoffman, president of the Tucson Roadrunners. Thanks for spending part of your Wednesday morning with us, Bob.
No, thanks for having me, Grant.
Hey, so how are things going with the Roadrunners? I see we are 25-22, right in the thick of things in the Pacific Division right now.
Yeah, it's been an interesting season because the team got off to a really good start and was able to work their way to, you know, around 8-9 games above 500, close to the holidays. And it looked like we were, you know, on paper at the beginning of the year when we talked, we knew we were going to be a fairly skilled team and a team that probably should be one to watch in the Pacific Division. And all of a sudden, inexplicably, you look at it and you can never put your finger on it. But there was a stretch of games where the team lost 8 in a row and just had a tough time finding the back of the net. Goalies struggling with their confidence, and it seemed like every bounce and every break went against us. And, you know, that happens during the course of a season, and that threw us into a little bit of a tailspin. But coming out of our All-Star game here, and now our second half of the season, if you will, we've been able to kind of right the ship and get points in 7 of our last 10 games. Had a great homestand that we just finished this this past weekend, taking points in all 4 games, winning 3 of them. So it got us back on track and got us into a playoff spot in our league and in our divisions. That 7 of the of the 10 teams in the Pacific make the postseason. So at the moment, sitting there in that final spot, very precarious position to be in, but you know, plenty of games left, 20 games left on our schedule, and continue to play the way we have, we should be able to settle into getting into the postseason. We've seen in every league and for every championship, that's all you need. You get in, you get a chance. You know, obviously we'd love to be higher seated, have more home games for our fans, et cetera, but you got to get in first, and that's our number one priority right now.
Without a doubt. I see our season goes basically towards the end of April, right? Last game is the 19th of April.
Yep, that is correct. We'll go all the way until that point, and then the playoffs get going right away. And, you know, I know last year our whiteout in Tucson ended way too quickly with just 2 games losing in the first round when we really were had high hopes and a high seed and thought we would be able to stretch a little bit further. But a tough postseason last year. See what we can do this year with it. But hockey jumps right into it. Playoff game starts just a few days after the regular season ends, and fans that have been to postseason games know the difference. They know that that's the best piece of the schedule, really, in my opinion, in all sports. And you know, when that chance, if that chance happens, and we're fortunate enough to you know, play in front of our home fans again this year, I encourage everybody, you don't want to miss it. It's absolutely a unique experience, and you kind of hold your breath for 2.5 hours to you know, see what's going to happen next, as every moment of every game is just that critical.
Without a doubt. With the U of A wrapping up their home basketball season last night, the golf tournament wrapping up at the end of this weekend, this is kind of your chance. The Tucson Roadrunners for the next month are your opportunity to see live professional sports here in Tucson. And you've got a number of awesome promo nights coming up at Tucson Arena, no?
Yeah, we do. I mean, some of our best of the year and favorite. I mean, we're busy stretch to finish the season, like it seems to be every year. And like right now tonight, we're on the road in Ontario, California, but it starts a stretch for us of 7 games in the next 12 days. So our boys will be busy. 4 of those are at home. Another homestand begins next Tuesday night. So a Tuesday, Wednesday, Saturday, Sunday home set that begins next week. And on that homestand, 2 of our larger promotions that we look forward to each and every year. Saturday the 15th of March is our First Responders Night, which is annually one of our best games of the year, typically, if not the largest crowd, you know, one of the top 2 or 3 crowds of the year. And it's just a great opportunity for us to recognize the police and the fire here in Tucson and really all of Southern Arizona. And the unique kind of twist to that game is that it's a doubleheader. Come and watch the police play the fire in a hockey game before our game. So that game starts at 4:30. And I'm telling you, I mean, last year we had more than 1,000 people that came to watch just that game and then nearly a sellout for the Roadrunners game a couple of hours later. That game is competitive. It is fun to watch. There was a fight a couple of years ago.
Oh, my goodness. Between the police and fire? Or was this between mayor and council? Sorry.
Well, either one, right? But no, it was great. They go at it. They do not want to lose to the other. There is that competitive nature between the two branches, the two arms. And, you know, they're friends off the ice, much like, you know, a lot of the players around the leagues in the professional ranks. They're friends off the ice. But when they get out there to play, they go at it. So this is not an exhibition. This is a competitive hockey game with guys that have either, you know, learned to skate and play men's league here in Tucson, or some that maybe have moved here that have a little bit of experience playing, whether it was at their high schools or at club hockey level. So it is really fun to watch. So a great experience to come and see that doubleheader on the 15th. And then on the 16th, every year the game closest to St. Patrick's Day, we put together a little shindig, a little party, and we'll be wearing special green jerseys throughout that game, as well as a green t-shirt giveaway, and you know, a post-game or pre-game party with a concert out on the plaza before the game. So come and check it out.
I love it. Thank you so much. You've been listening to Bob Hoffman, president of the Tucson Roadrunners. Get out there and support your local hockey club. Thank you again for spending part of your Wednesday with us, Bob, on The Morning Voice.
Thanks, Grant. Take care.
Don't go anywhere. We've got another hour of The Morning Voice coming up after the quick commercial break. You're listening to 1030 AM KVOI. Welcome back, Tucson, Arizona. You're listening to The Morning Voice on 1030 AM. I am your host, Grant Kruger. In our second hour, we're always talking all things hospitality related in the Old Pueblo. It's our high season. Things are rocking over here with the golf tournament going on this weekend. We've just wrapped up Gem Show. We had an amazing first hour with Bob Hoffman from the Tucson Roadrunners talking about all kinds of cool things they've got coming up over here. Another month and some change left of pro sports in Tucson. And of course, the World Baseball Classic wraps up tomorrow at Keno Veterans Memorial Stadium, 6 p.m., Germany against Brazil. So please get out there and support that event as well, too, because maybe one day we could really get baseball back here in the Old Pueblo. Wouldn't that be awesome? But on the top of the news on the restaurant front, Rio Nuevo announces this week a $2.3 million investment into a cold beer and cheeseburgers on the east side. Now, I think this surprised a lot of people for a number of reasons. First and foremost, I think that most of Tucson really associates Rio Nuevo, if you know what this tax increment financing is, and we've had Edmund Marquez from the Rio Nuevo board on our show here before. Essentially, it's a sales tax reinvestment group helping support what was generally considered to be just downtown Tucson. But the Rio Nuevo Multipurposes Facility District's boundaries actually go all the way to the east side, the far east side of Park Mall, where there's a number of places that have been undeveloped or underdeveloped for years and years. What do you do with a 30 or 40,000 square foot Sears or a Macy's or these dinosaurs, these big giant boxes that were built on retail and there just isn't that much retail anymore? Well, we've tried for years with these sort of experiential type concepts, right? Jumpy castle, bounce house, trampoline, bowling, arcade things. And they're sort of working, but you've also got to chop those pieces up into more bite-sized pieces, right? The old proverb of how you eat an elephant is one bite at a time. And how do you break down a 40,000 square foot mall space? Well, it's one bite at a time as well, too. And so Rio Nuevo's taken that first bite at a cold beer and cheeseburgers. This will be their second location in the Old Pueblo. They're on the northwest side at Oracle and Ina at a reasonably successful clip on a redesigned strip mall up there on that side of town. And the Phoenix-based group is going to open up their second outpost. The amount of money really surprises people. $2.3 million is a lot of money, right? And you look at that and you say, well, geez, like this isn't even a local restaurant concept. How do they get $2.3 million? But $2.3 is really just scratching the surface of what it costs to take a restaurant of that size, that square footage, a location that hasn't been food service before, to turn it into food service. You've got to build a hood, a type 1 Ansel hood with fire suppression, grease traps, 1,000 amps of electrical service. And well, I don't want to get into the weeds of all the restaurant parts and pieces you need. It's an awful lot of cash. It could be millions and millions of dollars. And in some cases, this is money that no customer sees. Nobody walks into your establishment and says, gosh, look at that 30-foot Type 1 Ansel hood, honey. Like, I bet that thing will call the fire department immediately when you know, the temperature gets too hot. But yet these things are required by code, which prevent an awful lot of restaurant development because nobody can afford to put this sort of infrastructure in. And so by seeding this, Rio Nuevo is going to get an investment from this company that'll be far more than the $2.3 million. And hopefully over a number of years, create sales tax to help pay for it and create jobs. And so I'm actually all for this one. I want there to be more restaurants in Tucson. I want there to be more competition for all of us. It makes everybody better. The existing restaurants around there will have to get better to compete with cold beer and cheeseburgers. There are, however, a number of heavy-hitting competitors in that sports bar world on the east side. You've got a Yard House. You've got a BJ's. Yes, I know they're chains, and we prefer to talk about local places. But these are well-heeled chains. These are reasonably executed chains. And so there is going to be an absolute war on the east side for this sports bar business. And there just won't be enough for everyone to make it there when this musical chairs happens. Even Trident, a well-received local concept, right, that had five locations. The only one they've ever closed was the Broadway and Craycroft area. And again, it's because they had a number of heavy-hitting competitors on that east side over there. And so ultimately, I wish Cold Beer and Cheeseburgers a lot of luck. I think it'll be great to get that side of the Park Mall going in some capacity. We need to see something over there as there's quite a bit of struggle in the food court. We've had guests on Jump in Tucson before from that food court that have talked about their struggles. So an exterior location with a big, awesome east-facing patio could be a pretty good place to spend a happy hour as well, too. And so I wish them a tremendous amount of success. As well, breaking on the news just yesterday, I was on one of the front pages of Phoenix paper, yours truly over here, on our lawsuit with the state government over eggs, right? And the price of eggs. It's been something that's been all over the news, not just state news, but national news. About a year and a half ago, I sued Governor Hobbs and Chris Mays and the Arizona Department of Agriculture over a way that they illegally created a law with respect to animal husbandry. I said back at that time, this was going to cause the price of eggs to skyrocket, as you were only going to benefit the two biggest purveyors in the entire state. Those two purveyors worked to help create this rule. It wasn't even a law by the Arizona Department of Agriculture. And as such, they put themselves into a monopolistic position. And not shockingly, egg prices have gone through the roof. They've more than doubled on us since just July alone. And so just 2 days ago, the state legislator is working on plans on scrapping that particular rule, most likely to avoid a trial with yours truly over here. And of course, with the backing of the Goldwater Institute and Pacific Legal, who have helped me out on that one. Got a little bit of hate on that Howie Fisher article he wrote about that one. It happens. But ultimately, this will be a win for consumers and a win for the food service business and, quite frankly, a win for those who want limited government, right? Our laws need to be created by the lawmaking branch of our government, not by the unelected bureaucrats. I find it very interesting when I hear the left criticize, you know, Elon Musk saying you're an unelected bureaucrat and helping create laws and policies, and yet the Arizona Department of Agriculture and their unelected bureaucrats absolutely created a law in a very improper manner. As a kid who got an A in high school civics class, I called shenanigans on that particular law, and we were going to see that one tested in court, and it looks like the state government is folding before their day in court over here because they knew what they did was wrong. So chalk it up, a little win for small business over here, a big win for the consumers, and anything we can do to keep prices down for all of you. Thank you very much, man. I do appreciate that. we are really trying to fight to keep prices down, because otherwise we're going to see more and more businesses like restaurants closing. We've lost a number of cool places over just this last year. As you look at our higher minimum wage, right? The city of Tucson's got a higher minimum wage than even the state. We're staring down the barrel of this sales tax increase. Just next week, we'll get that drop. Hopefully on our next Wednesday show, I'll get my good buddy Josh Jacobson, speaking of chickens over here, to come on in, and we'll break down the results of Proposition 414, assuming, of course, we get those results. As a little birdie has said, they might be a little bit behind in counting some of these ballots in the city of Tucson. We will find out. Hopefully, we'll have those results for you next Wednesday. But either way, these conditions have caused a whole number of closures, right? We lost Fire Truck Brewing and all of their locations over just this last year as they've sort of winded down their operations. It was just announced the other day that the 1912 Brewing Company, located at 2045 Forbes Boulevard here in Tucson, has also announced new ownership after 9 years. They're moving on in a different direction as well. And it worries me when we see like these local restaurants and we see these local breweries closing down. As we've talked about on this show, we've lost, you know, La Caves, we lost Hermanos, even Hi-Fi downtown went down in flames pretty recently. And this is a concerning topic when you see these things going down. This first week of March or the last week of February, you couldn't have a higher than high season. These things shouldn't be being lost at that particular time. Now, I love breweries and brewers. As you might know from listening to this show in the past, I used to work for Breckenridge Brewery, spent 4 years with that particular corporation serving bartending and getting to spend a bunch of time in a mash tun and a brew kettle over there. So I know a thing or two about fermentation. And when we come back after the break, we're going to bring in a very interesting local brewer, Mazdak Movahedi from Parseus Brewing, is going to be joining us on The Morning Voice. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to Grant Kruger, 10:30 a.m. The Voice, your home for local news and talk.
At 16 minutes after 8 o'clock, I'm Matt Neely on 10:30 The Voice. Traffic hazard reported, La Cholla at River. Crash at Nogales Highway in Valencia. Traffic hazard, Grant and Wyatt. And a hit and run. They are still working Saurita at Nogales Highway. Taking a look at your Tucson area freeways, still slowing on I-19 from before you get to San Javier Road, and you'll be back on your way by the time you get to Valencia. I-10 westbound, slowing from Wilmont to Alvernon. I-10 eastbound, slowing from the I-19 crossover to Keno, it looks like. And I-10 eastbound, slowing from Twin Peaks to Sunset. Tucson weather, high today, 79 degrees. Overnight low, 53. Tomorrow, 67, and a slight chance of showers. They're hanging in there at 45 degrees in Tucson. Now back to The Morning Voice. Hey, and real quick, I've got a four-pack of tickets to the Tucson Wagon and History Museum. That's over on 6th Avenue near the rodeo grounds, adjacent to the rodeo grounds. And if you'd like this four-pack of tickets, it's a fascinating museum. You can see the wagons, the carriages, and a lot of great Tucson historical artifacts. Give me a call. I got a four-pack of tickets for you, 520-790-2040, 520-790-2040, and you'll be going to see the Tucson Wagon and History Museum with three of your closest friends. Now back to Grant.
Welcome back to The Morning Voice. I'm your host, Grant Kruger. We are joined live in the KVOI studios by a man who has got an interesting past over here, an interesting passion. I love brewers. I've got the head brewer and owner of a Persian Pilsner beer, Parseus Brewing, Mr. Mazdak Movahedi, live in the KVOI studios. Welcome, Mazdak.
Thank you very much, Grant. Thank you for inviting me to your great radio.
No, very excited to have you here this morning.
Thank
you. We were talking all things craft beer in Tucson right before the break. There's been a couple ownership changes and closures and whatnot going on over here. Tell us a bit about your background. How did you get into brewing beer?
So thank you very much. My name is Mazdak Movahedi. Sorry if I have a little bit of accent before I'm starting that. It's a little hard to understanding, but I try to do my best. Anyway, yes, I'm Mazdak Movahedi, and I'm here in United States for almost 10 years now. And I started brewing since 2019. And actually, my background is in architecture and interior design in hospitality area, like the bars and restaurants and coffee shops. And yeah, during the lockdown, I started to start my brewing and brewing company. So that's how I started.
So during the lockdown, you had a little passion for beer. You were locked up over here and thought to yourself, you know what I need to do with my spare time over here is make alcohol.
Yes, actually not in that way, but longest story short, there was a lack of the Persian beer at the market of the beers. As far as the Persians are the first brewers, one of the first brewers in the history of the world, which is coming back to the 5,500 years ago, right? So there was no actual Persian beer at the market, right, into 2019. And I really wanted to show how the Persian beer tastes and how it's work and how the ancient beer kind of tastes like. So that's why how I got inspired to get to the Persian beer area.
So are there brands that exist then internationally that just don't make their way to the United States, or this style of beer just hasn't even been made since then?
So there is no any alcoholic Persian beer at the market. So after the revolution in Iran, there is no any alcoholic beverage at the market, and there is no any, there are the brewers, but they are just producing the non-alcoholic beers, right? And there is nothing like existing like the ethnic Persian beer who are using like the Persian ingredients or getting closer to the ancient formula of the Persian beers. There were nothing existing like that. There are some small brewers like me on the west side of United States that they are brewing with the, again, Persian ingredients, like the different stuff, but not a Persian style. So yeah, that's how it started.
So define to me the ingredients in beer and what makes the Persian ingredients in beer different than, say, quote unquote, regular beer.
Correct. Yes. For example, our Pilsner, we use rice in our brewing process, and that's one of the main ingredients that Persians are using in everything. We technically use eating rice with all of our foods. So yes, so that's one of the main ingredients that we use in our beers to give them more Persian taste, for example.
And so that's a little different than, say, the malted barley and whatnot that are used in traditional American style beers.
Correct. We still use the barley or stuff, but we added rice on that on top.
Okay, but you still use hops as well, too?
Correct, then? Yeah, we use the hops.
And so hops, of course, is a natural preservative as well, too, right? A lot of styles of beer came, very hoppy styles of beer came. The genesis was from its antiseptic properties, so that this, in a pre-modern refrigeration world, right, might actually hold for a while at, say, sea with a bunch of sailors. Right. And so the India Pale Ale, the IPA style, comes exactly from that background, right? That exactly dry hopping, second introduction of hops into the process to keep it from essentially going bad, no?
Exactly, yes. That's how it works, yes.
And so where are you brewing your beer right now? Like, where are you making this?
Good. We are actually contract brewers right now. And we are contract brewing with the Breakbox Brewing, which is located in downtown Tucson. And we work with them for almost like 1 year now, and we love each other. We work together, and yeah, they are great brewers. They are very professional. They know what they do. They have experience more than 20 years. So, yes.
So Breakbox Brewing, for those that aren't keeping score at home, was the old Thunder Canyon Brewery that's exactly located on Broadway, right? Right next to the Tucson Metro Chamber?
Exactly.
So can you bring your beer right over to the Metro Chamber / Sun Corridor offices over there as well, too? Are you sharing some of that with Michael Guyman and the crew?
Why not? My pleasure.
I think that'd be great. So how many gallons a year are you making, do you think, right now?
Right now, let's say, I'm not going with the gallons. I'm going with, like, each batch of us, it gets, like, around 4,000 to 5,000 cans. So, like, the 12-ounce cans, like that. So that is how the amount is. But we are trying to go higher and get bigger.
Okay, so you're canning right now as well,
right,
too.
Right now we're canning, right.
And you do the canning on site over there at BrickBox as well?
Right, at the BrickBox, yeah.
And so can we get BrickBox beer in cans as well, too? Or is this canning process just a proprietary thing for Parsius beer specifically?
No, they have their own beer, too. You can purchase their own cans, too.
Very cool. So does that mean we can go to the store somewhere and buy Parsius beer? Like, yes. Where is this available right now?
Right now, we are available all around Tucson. Of course, we are not available at the gas station or like the Walmart or those markets, but we are available at the liquor stores, local liquor stores, and we are available at the, all the Persian restaurants at the town and Indian restaurants almost, and a few bars and few restaurants in town. So
is it available on draft as well too, or just in cans right now?
We have the draft too.
So you can get right now a keg of Perseus Pilsner, let's say?
Correct.
Interesting. Very cool. Name me a couple restaurants that you could go try this right now at.
Right now, you can go to the Persian Room. That's the restaurant that they have it. Or Zika Twist, the Indian restaurant that they have it. Saffron Restaurant, they are my new clients that they have it. Saffron Indian Restaurant. And the Breakbox itself, they have it. They are restaurants and bar together. And at the 4th Avenue, you can go to the Box Yard. They have it on tap.
Yes. Very cool, Mazdek. That's awesome. You've got some pretty decent market penetration going on over here already with the Persian beer. That's pretty sweet. So let's get back to your inspirations on this one. This is COVID-19. You're in lockdown. You're sitting at home by yourself. You're tired of watching the Tiger King on TV over here. You decide to make this beer. Give me the backstory of your passion for this and brewing.
My father was brewing. Brewer. So he was brewing beer at home always since it was illegal to buy it outside. There were nothing exist over there. So I saw how to brew from my childhood. And so I had a little bit background of that. But during the lockdown, I was always thinking, like, there should be a kind of beer with some sort of the Persian taste. Like, why there is no any beer like with saffron? Why there is nothing exists with the saffron? Why nobody did it before, right? So I had a lot of free time, so I could buy it like the home brewing stuff and start brewing myself. So I started to brew, and I tried to find out how like the people were brewing like 2,000 years ago in our area, in the Iran area. And I was successful to find some sort of formula, and I could combine it with the today techniques of the brewing. And that combination of those things made Parsis, but the homebrew Parsis at the first step. So after like I tried that for like 2, 3, 4 years brewing that at home, and get the correct formula and exact numbers of what I needed. So that time I could go to the actual brewers and ask them and show them my formula. And I talk about my idea and say, look, I have this, and do you like to work together? And thankfully, the Breakbox Brewing, they were so interested in this idea, and they liked my formulas, and they wanted to work together. So
break down the name Perseus Brewing. Like, where does that come from?
So Perseus is actually two words. It's Pars and Seas. Pars in Persian language means Persians, Pars, and Seas in American English language is seas, like the ocean, right? So I really wanted to have a name of the Persian seas, like the Caspian Sea and the Persian Gulf in the name of my company, but I couldn't combine them. So at the end, I came up with the idea of Persian seas, which is Pars seas together.
And that's a really cool logo you've got over here. I know we're radio, but I'm staring at a four-pack of cans of Perseus Brewing over here. They're hoppy Persian Pilsner. And there's a pretty cool-looking lion and sun on there. Where does the lion and sun come into?
Exactly. Lion and sun is a very old Persian symbol. Actually, if you look at our previous flag, which we had it like 50 years ago, we had that symbol in our flag. So this is an abstraction of the lion and sun together. So I see as abstract, but it still has the meaning of that, and it's symbolizing that symbol.
Amazing. Well, I wish our listeners could taste some of this Persian Pilsner over here. At the break, I think we're going to have to crack one of these cans open and start our morning off right over here on The Morning Voice, right? You can't drink all day if you don't start in the morning, I always say. Well, don't go anywhere. We're going to have a couple more segments here with Mazdek Movahedi, the owner and brewer of Perseus Brewing, pretty much the only Persian beer I've heard of, certainly in the state of Arizona, if not the United States. States. More fascinating conversation with Mazdak coming up after the break. You're listening to The Morning Voice on 1030 AM, your home for local news and talk.
Hey, it's Matt Neely here. I've got some tickets to the Tucson Wagon and History Museum. It's a four-pack of tickets. Fascinating museum. You can see all the carriages and wagons that they used in the parade and all sorts of Tucson historical artifacts. And they can a four-pack of tickets can be yours. It's on 6th Avenue over by the adjacent to the rodeo grounds. This four-pack of tickets can be yours if you give me a call, 520-790-2040. That's 790-2040. Give me a call. Now back to Grant.
Welcome back to The Morning Voice with your host, Grant Kruger, this wonderful Wednesday morning, March 5th. The Morning Voice comes to you every single weekday, 7 to 9 a.m. on KVOI. On Wednesdays, we've got Lydia Aranda bringing you all kinds of local news. On Tuesdays, we've got Ted Maxwell from the Southern Arizona Leadership Council and his engagement hours, I guess now, as it's 2 hours, 7 to 9. On Wednesdays, you get me, a bit of food for thought, the intersection of food and politics here in the Old Pueblo. On Thursdays, Tom Moulton from the Southern Arizona Attractions Alliance. And on Friday, Dr. Ed Ackerley from the University of Arizona, one of the biggest economic drivers here in Tucson for sure. And he brings you all kinds of topics about the U of A. But we've got another segment over here with a brewer. You know how I love beer over here, and I love local microbrews. And when it was brought to my attention that there was a local Persian brewing company here in Tucson, I had absolutely no idea that this was going on, and it is my pleasure to welcome back Mazdak Movahedi to the KVOI studios. Welcome back.
Thank you so much, Grant. Thank you.
No, thank you. We really appreciate you coming to spend part of your Wednesday with us. I've got part of Mazdak's collection over here, the Persian Saffron IPA. So I'm going to start my morning off right. You can hear the sound of this Saffron IPA being cracked into the KVOI studios. I hope that, Matt, this is not a violation of FCC laws in any capacity. And this is absolutely delicious. Describe to me the flavors in here. This has got saffron in it?
Yes, we actually use Iranian saffron in it. Actually, it's a funny story because I was looking for saffron and I found some sort of saffron here, like the Spanish saffron, like the Afghan saffron, like some Iranian saffron I found it in the United States. But when I used that as a taster, I didn't like it. Either of them. So I got the ticket for one of my lovely friend Mohsen, and I sent him directly to Iran to buy like 300 grams of saffron for me and come back in a week.
This sounds like a drug deal over here. 300 grams of saffron.
Very illicit.
Yeah, was this before the tariffs? I don't know. We got to be careful here.
Exactly. Saffron is the most expensive spice in the world.
Yes.
Right?
Give us an idea. What's 300 grams? The street price of 300 grams of saffron these days.
It's $300.
Okay. Fair enough.
Yeah. Is it $300? So he went there, he got the saffron and he came back. But it was a really, really good saffron. So that's how we are picking our stuff.
This is the good stuff over there. I know you guys can't taste this one over the radio, but we're drinking Saffron IPA over here on The Morning Voice.
Yes, Saffron IPA, yes. So actually, we are picky about all of our ingredients. We are really have a high standard to picking our ingredients. We are trying to get the most local ones or the most, let's say, I forgot the word.
The highest quality
organic,
stuff.
Organic.
Yep. Organic.
Natural and organic ones, yeah. We are trying to get those ones. So we have a very high standards for Parsis, and we believe that's how it makes the Parsis different from the other beers. And you know the famous sentence that says when the quantity goes high, quality comes down, and we really really believe in this, and our quantity always in a level of that we can keep our quality high. So yeah, we are a handcrafted beer. Each cans are checking by the hands. It's not easy, but we are so proud to have a good quality product.
No, quality costs money for sure. There's no question, Mazdek, that as you increase volume, it's tough to stay on top of that. It's tough to maintain that at these high levels. What do you think is the most costly and time-consuming part of the brewing process? Is it the, you know, $300 a gram saffron over here, or are there more costs? Yeah.
Great question, Grant. Actually, at this stage, my most time-consuming part of my business in my are my commercials. My social media, because again, we have a very high standards for our social media. We just don't want to take a picture and put it over there. Hey, this is our saffron beer. No, each commercial, each advertisement that we are making, we have a story behind it. We are trying to tell some story behind it. That's why we are spending a lot of time on picking the music, creating our own music, creating our own cinematic video or video clips or everything. So if you just check out on Instagram, our Parsis Brewery Instagram, you can see our commercials and advertisements, how we are trying to develop it in a good way. And we are really spending time on that part. And money-consuming part, Grant, can be actually right now buying the ingredients and cans. And especially right now, when there's a 25% tariff on the importing and exporting stuff from the Canada. So that can have an effect.
Is this where the aluminum comes from in the cans specifically?
Exactly. That can really affect, I'm really scared right now. I don't know what's going to happen in the future, but I'm hopeful at the same time. So that might affecting on my business.
Without a doubt, there's certainly a number of facets of business that could be affected by tariffs over here. And with those tariffs starting yesterday, a 25% tariff on import goods from Mexico and from Canada, this is something to think about. We always think about Mexico and our border with Mexico, and you think of the produce that comes in from Mexico, but you don't think much about Canada. We, at the first hour, we were actually talking about Canada with Bob Hoffman, president of the Tucson Roadrunners, and that excitement of those hockey games and that interest and tension even between U.S. and Canada. And suddenly, here's that 25% tariff, like taking a toll potentially on a local business.
Right. That's totally correct. And we are trying to keep go with the cans, because cans are more green and more easier to recycle and is better for the earth, so we are trying to be sustainable and go with the cans and not shifting back to the bottles. So, but if the price of the cans goes high, we don't have any other options, and that's scary. But I believe the people who have made this decision thought about the effect of that in the economy, and I believe they have a plan B or something on their table to fix the issues in the future.
Certainly, tariffs are often used, Mazdek, as a negotiating process as well, too. This might not even be something that might stick around. We saw a month ago the threat of tariffs, and it was pulled at the absolute last minute. And so I wouldn't even be surprised if between now and the next Wake Up Tucson show that I've got, next Wednesday, or the Morning Voice, next Wednesday, that these tariffs might not even be there, or they may be substantively changed some capacity as well, too. Because that certainly could be a big cost for you. You've got two different sizes of cans here in front of me right now. There's a 12 and a 16?
16, right. But we have stopped to go with the 16 anymore because 90% of my customers are restaurants and bars. So they prefer smaller cans. But the liquor stores and winery shops, they prefer bigger cans.
I like the big cans over here. I know when I day drink, while I do the Morning Voice over here, I want the biggest can possible.
Right.
Are these the two sizes you've got then, a 12 and a 16?
Exactly.
There's no king can of Parsius right now out there?
No, we don't have it.
We haven't quite gone to that market. No. But and then you said earlier that there was barrels as well, too.
Yes.
So this is available in the half barrel size now?
It's a six-tail size, the smallest available barrel size.
Okay. Six-tail. So And again, break down a couple local restaurants where our listeners could try Parsius beer.
Right. Right now, Parsius beer, they can go to the Persian Rooms. They all have it. The Persian Rooms restaurant, they have it over here in Phoenix. The Pars Cuisine restaurant is in Phoenix. Again, they have it. In Tucson, Zinka Twist restaurant, the Indian restaurant, they have it. Saffron Indian restaurant have it. And Voltron Brewing, they have Breakbox Brewing. They have it.
Now you partnered with Voltron Brewing, right? So yeah, you were they were kind of helping shepherd you into this business as well. That was a partnership between Borderlands and originally Fire Truck, and now it's a partnership between Borderlands and Breakbox Brewing. No, or excuse me, and Crooked Tooth as well too.
Yes, actually, I was so lucky to meet Voltron Brewing people and the guys who owns it, and they were always very helpful to me, and they helped me a lot with the process of the brewing and everything, and I'm really thankful to them. They were always one of my first customers, and they always buy my product at the first hand. So yeah, I love them, and they really helped me with the storage and everything else. The Voltron Brewing, one of the loveliest places that is my favorite always. And yeah, they have it always on tap, Voltron, and yeah, we work together right now and we love each other.
That's so cool. I love that support between local restaurants and breweries. You see that so often here in Tucson, and it's one of the things that gives me passion to continue to fight for the local restaurant industry, and it's certainly my pleasure to have you here on this show today, Mazdek. We've got one more segment with Mazdek Movahedi coming up. We're doing a little bit of Persian day drinking over here on The Morning Voice, 10:30 a.m. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back to The Morning Voice. I am your host, Grant Kruger, and we've got one more segment over here with Mazdek Movahedi, the owner, chief brewer, CEO, and mad scientist behind Parseus Brewing. Welcome back.
Hey, thank you.
So you were an interior designer by trade before this. You were saying you did like some of local restaurants' interior designs. Break down for our listeners like where you helped design before you started brewing the beer.
Perfect. Thank you, Grant. Yes, as I told you, my background is actually coming back to the architecture and interior design. I have a master's in architecture and interior design. So yes, I work with a few companies here in Tucson, local companies. One of the loveliest ones was the Fourth Architecture. It's a kind of the famous one, and they are a specialist on the hospitality designs.
Like, Fourth Architecture and Interior is great. They were actually the design, build, architect of record for Union Public House, believe it or not.
Exactly. Yes, they are great. They are great. They are professional, and they do what they do exactly. And yeah, I worked with them for almost 2 years. I was part of their design team, and the restaurant here in town that I work mostly on that is a Mohawk Cuban restaurant on the Campbell and Grant. So I worked on that restaurant for like one year or something like that, and I did the part of the interior design of the bar. Yes, that's one of the examples that I can give you right now on top of
my that's
head.
A beautiful space, and that was a great remodel as well too. That was the Vive Caribe restaurant,
exactly.
You know, for many different years, and it kind of had some ups and downs as a Caribbean restaurant and nightclub there, and it's now Moho, a Cuban cuisine. I think the only Cuban restaurant I know of in Tucson as well.
That's
too.
Correct. Yeah, that's the only one in Tucson. That's as far as I know too.
So where did you decide to take that risk? Because that entrepreneurial risk, that risk-reward relationship is something we talk about a lot here in KVOI and in The Morning Voice. Like, what drove you to reach out and say, you know what, I'm tired of working for somebody and being an interior design architect, and I'm going to go out and start my own business. Like, when did you decide to take that leap?
Right. Actually, I love the architecture and interior design. I love the part that you're designing and you know, getting the materials and everything, but it was coming sometimes so hard for me to continue behind the AutoCAD and you know, the actual technical drawings of the project. You know, I was suffering of that, and I was not happy of doing that. I loved architecture, but I didn't like the part of that. So that was the part that it pushed me, you know, to a little bit get far from the architecture and interior design and just get closer to the beer area. And as far as there was a lack of the beer, Persian beer on the market, I thought that's a good time to start. So I know it's very risky, it's very hard for you, especially after the years of studying and working in the specific area, and just stopping that and going again to a newer area and starting the new things that you have no background and no idea what's going on, or at least a little bit of that. So that's a very risky, and that is, you know, it might you might facing the lower income for few months, for a year, or a financial issues, you know, so many other problems, you know, maybe you're working more than 12 hours in a day, 18 hours in a day, but no any income, you know. So yeah, those are happening. But at the end of the day, you are happy because you work for yourself. You know,
of course, that's one of the amazing things of entrepreneurship. So quick question, if you know restaurant interior design and you know how to make the beer, you're only one step away here from there being a Parsius pub in some capacity. Do you think you'd ever make your own brew pub in any way, shape or form?
That is my long-term plan. Thank you very much. Yeah, you got a really, very correct point, Grant. Yeah,
I can read between the lines over here, Mazdaq. Right. I can see where you've got these overlapping skill sets, that Venn diagram of things. And it can be quite the challenge, right? The technical skill set of being able to make beer and the entrepreneurial business sense to run the business can be two, you know, sometimes divergent skill sets as well too.
That's very correct. But the whole art is to connecting those things together, because I believe they go parallel and at some point they can get closer to each other and touch each other. So yeah, I will come to that point. Hopefully I'm going to have my brewery location with a beautiful design tap room.
I love it. You've heard it here first on The Morning Voice. If you're listening, Rio Nuevo, young budding entrepreneur here in the studio looking for a little bit of seed money. Break it down for us in our last minute about where we can find Parsius Beer and your socials.
Yeah, you can find it at the Voltron Brewing, my lovely brewing that I love this location. The Breakbox Brewing, you can find it at the Parsius, Persian restaurants, Persian Room, Pars Cuisines, Box Yard, those are that I remember.
Parsius Brewing, right? Thank you so much, Mazdaq, for coming to spend part of your Wednesday morning with us. I've never heard about Persian beer before. This has been really enlightening, and I wish you a tremendous amount of success. Thank you for bringing your delicious saffron IPA that I've enjoyed in the process of this show as well, too. It's been an amazing Wednesday morning for you. Get out there, World Baseball Classic tomorrow, concert on Friday and Saturday, golf tournament on Sunday. Don't go anywhere. Kathleen Wynn coming up after the break. You've been listening to Grant Kruger, The Morning Voice on 10:30 a.m., your home for local news and talk.
China Watch on When Tucson coming up next, and don't forget to mail in those ballots.